Roxo Media House.
Welcome back to Fortitude, everyone. JW Wilson. I'm here with a very special guest, narcotics officer Jeremy Prescott. Thank you for being here today, Jeremy. We appreciate Absolutely. Your time. The reason Jeremy's here to talk about, or he's on the show today, is talk about a very hot topic, something that scares a lot of us, fentanyl. The DEA has called fentanyl the deadliest drug our country's ever seen. It's a synthetic opioid drug, as in a painkiller. It's a prescription for those who get it legally. It was introduced in the medical practice in the 1960s as an intravenous analgesic, 100 times more potent than morphine, 50 times more potent than heroin. It's a really, really bad thing. But I'm grateful for your time today, Jeremy. We're here to learn about fentanyl. So again, thank you for being here. And from your experience, tell us about this terrible thing called fentanyl.
Sure. So from my experience, it kind of came onto the scene a few years ago, just kind of quietly showed up. And then we saw more and more of it. It kind of exploded in our faces. And we weren't sure what was going on with it, where it was coming from, and as were the consumers. They thought they were getting legitimate prescription drugs that turned out to be counterfeit drugs laced with, or not laced, but made with fentanyl. And it started wreaking havoc on us. So we kind of had to turn around and figure out what was going on and how to pursue it, how to chase it, and use our, you know, our traditional means of narcotics investigations and try to gear it towards this new threat and this new problem.
So. For those who aren't super familiar with it, like I said, it's a painkiller of sorts, an opioid painkiller.
Absolutely, but yeah.
Why would people want this outside of the general like surgery or if they're in a great deal of pain from a doctor? But why would somebody want fentanyl?
So I don't think the majority of people that are getting it are seeking fentanyl out. The majority of them are getting it disguised as something else.
Okay.
You have to keep in mind the prescription issue to this, the stuff that's issued in the prescription form, the stuff used in the hospital is dosed in micrograms. So you're talking very finite amounts of fentanyl being entered into a person's system. Well, when you're getting this stuff in the streets, you're getting an upwards of a milligram up to 5 milligrams per pill with a deadly dose of fentanyl being it. Like 2.5 milligrams.
Which is the equivalent of, I saw, 5 grains of salt.
5 grains of salt, right.
Unbelievable.
Absolutely. So you're talking about a very, very fine line between what could be considered non-fatal and fatal. And that's kind of where the problem arises.
Before we get to the source of this and how it's entering our culture, the FDA has approved this drug for pain, like we talked about. Is the FDA, are they in a process to stop allowing it to be approved? Is it still going to remain as a painkiller regardless of the problem it's causing?
Yeah, I don't know that. I don't imagine that they would go down that route to unapprove it. But I can't speak on that.
Surely. Yep. Okay. Well, let's start from the ground floor. Where is fentanyl coming from?
So the majority of the fentanyl we're seeing is coming from China, either shipped as the final powder product or as precursor chemicals. It's being shipped to Mexico. And then in Mexico, it's being either processed in its powder form or turned into the powder form in labs in Mexico.
Into these like oxycodone, Xanax, things like
Xanax,
that.
Xanax, and even just raw powder.
Why are people mixing it with called oxycodone? What is the benefit to the dealer, the manufacturer, or the why is it being involved in other drugs?
So as far as with the oxycodone, it's not being mixed with regular oxycodone. It's just being pressed to make it look like an oxycodone pill.
Okay.
An oxycodone pill was a very popularly abused medication. Now it's really hard to find because all the control measures that are in place. But the heroin addicts and people that were addicted to heroin that wanted something else would often use the oxys.
Right.
And then once that kind of got shut down, there was kind of the void in there, and they saw this void, and they figured they could start pushing these pills in the U.S. because of the opioid epidemic here. So now we have all these people that are seeking these pills, the painkillers. So somebody decided this is a good way we can fill that void with the counterfeit pills.
Is it cheaper to manufacture than an oxycodone? So it's a price thing?
It's very cheap. It's very cheap for them to manufacture these pills. Gotcha. And it's very profitable.
Guessing the drug cartels in Mexico were behind the majority of this?
Correct.
these chemicals that go into it that make it so potent. We've talked about 100 times more potent than morphine and 50 times more than heroin. That's staggering. But what are the chemicals involved? Are you familiar with this? What makes it so potent?
I mean, the fentanyl is what makes it potent.
That's the active ingredient?
That's the active ingredient. The rest of what's going to be in the pill is going to be acetaminophen or some kind of binder, mm-hmm. which is what holds everything together, or and some type of coloring agent to get it to that blue color. But other than that, it's going to be fentanyl.
And it's going probably by road up through the border to all over the country. Is that typically how you find it? You find it, it's going to people that deal it. Let's stay here in Dallas-Fort Worth for the present conversation, but it's arriving in these packages, like you said, whether it's oxycodone, powder, pills, all the forms that it shows up, and then it's being sold to people by purpose, by accident. I mean, there's an intent to sell it, obviously, but these right. people are the people that are buying this stuff, are they're not always wanting fentanyl, or are they wanting it at all? Is there a desire for the drug called fentanyl?
So I've seen in some cases the desire for fentanyl. In some cases, we see that people know that it's fentanyl and they just disregard it because of their addiction.
Right.
And then we've seen people that just get it not knowing what's in it. It's not sold as fentanyl. It's not labeled as fentanyl. It's not packaged as fentanyl. It's often sold by, you know, whatever the common street name is. A lot of times in the oxycodone pills, it's Percs, which is short for Percocets. It's mm-hmm. Blues. M30s, those are the, you know, the markings on the pill. And that's kind of what people call them. Percs is one of the real common names that it's asked for by. By now, I would think that most people know that they're not legitimate. I'm sure there's still people out there that don't know, especially people right. that are kind of new to the drug world may not know. But most people know that they're not getting legitimate pills.
So the folks that are making up in the news or in the hospitals, these are generally people buying something, then fentanyl's obviously there, it's taking them down. So it's an accidental overdose. It's not, again, no one tends to overdose typically, but these are accidental overdoses because fentanyl is being introduced into something they normally would get high off of. Correct.
Correct. And yeah, the terminology accidental overdose is kind of, in some cases, there's legislation that was just passed recently. That I believe it's in the Senate now in Texas to change it where some of these can be labeled as poisonings mm-hmm. because the person that's taking it doesn't know what they're ingesting.
Right.
So you're handing me something that I don't know that I ingest. So now it's not an accidental overdose. It's a poisoning.
Right.
And if that all passes, then those could actually be investigated as murder cases.
When you encounter someone on fentanyl, or what does a typical scene look like? Is there a general sense of what this world looks like under fentanyl?
So, I mean, it depends on what stage they're at, how they're using it, how much they're using, mm-hmm. but it's a depressant. So it's going to kind of bring them down, as far as what you're going to see. They doze off, a lot of dozing off, hard to stay awake, and that's what you're going to observe. Now, if it's a fatal overdose, I mean, within minutes, they're going to be gone. They're going to be unconscious on the floor, stop breathing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it acts very, very quickly.
Is that the obvious solution to an overdose with this particular drug?
Absolutely. Administering Narcan as soon as possible mm-hmm. to reverse the effects of the opioid or block the effects of the opioid is tremendous in helping save people that are overdosing.
You mentioned a few of the symptoms. What is fentanyl? What does it do to people that gives it? It's not a desired effect, but it gives them some sort of high. What is fentanyl doing to people?
So I guess it's just a euphoric high. I don't know the exact. It's mm-hmm. it's I don't want to say different for everybody, but I don't know the exact way that makes them feel. But a lot of people that are addicted to it need it to feel normal. Like if they don't get right. that high, they're going to get dope sick and mm-hmm. and it's going to be a bad day for them.
I see some of the side effects, you alluded to a few of them, drowsiness, nausea, confusion, constipation, sedation tolerance, addiction, respiratory depression, arrest, and unconsciousness. So it's got all the things. I mean, we've kind of covered what it's doing to people. What's happening in with you guys as far as trying to stop this problem? Because obviously it hit the scene, like you said, quickly, and it's become a massive problem.
Absolutely.
And you agree with that, I assume.
Absolutely.
What is being done or attempting to be done to stop it? Because it's everywhere now, right?
It is everywhere. I can tell you that just here, I can only speak to what we're doing. Mm-hmm. But we've put together teams that focus on chasing the fentanyl. We put together teams that will actually, you know, as long as the notification process works like it should, we will respond to the overdoses. So if we get an overdose, we get the response, we can actually go up, show up on scene, assess the situation, interview people, collect evidence, you know, download phones if that's possible, and actually target the person that's selling the pill that killed the person or caused the person to overdose. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we've had some success with. And it's relatively a new concept, something that we're really pushing through trying to figure it out as we go.
Have you guys had any successes as far as seizures and busts and things of that nature?
Yes, absolutely. We've had some successes, and a lot of these cases, if we can, we'll partner with you know, our federal agencies, federal partners, and try to take these cases federally, just because the statutes federally mm-hmm. may have a little bit more teeth in them. And we've had some success. Absolutely, we've had some success prosecuting these cases, especially on the federal side.
So there's some federal aid behind you guys to do this more often and
yes.
keep these people, these bad guys, behind bars.
Absolutely, and a lot of the three-letter agencies, they've made this their priority as well.
Mm-hmm.
This is enemy number one in their eyes. You know, they're chasing the fentanyl and fentanyl distributors as well.
Could I touch on that one more time? Everybody knows, you know, methamphetamine, cocaine, the really hard stuff, the heroin stuff. But why is fentanyl surpassed all those so quickly? But again, we've talked about it's being mixed in and
right.
unbeknownst to a lot of people. But why has it jumped on the scene in such force?
Because it's cheap. It's cheap, and it takes such small amounts to be potent. So okay. you could take, for example, we had an overdose recently where the person that died thought that they were ingesting cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't. It may have been some cocaine, but it was cocaine with fentanyl in it. And so what you can do is you can take a kilo of cocaine, you can break that up, add other cutting agents to it, which are, you know, not active ingredients. And then you can sprinkle a little fentanyl over it, and now you've taken, you know, a kilo of cocaine and turn it into multiple kilos of cocaine.
Gotcha.
Without losing the potency of it. Because mm-hmm. if you're selling weak product, you're not going to have customers coming back to you.
Sure.
If you're selling potent stuff, that's what they're going to be asking for.
Mm-hmm. So. I read 2 days ago from the date of this recording that Dallas had 27 suspected fentanyl overdoses on one day. I think it was maybe earlier this week, so a Wednesday, let's call it. They had reported 27 suspected overdoses on fentanyl in one day. I mean, so I'm just trying to highlight that this is a problem. Everybody knows it's a problem. How often are you dealing with on a daily basis? Are you seeing overdoses every day, or is it become a norm to deal with this every day?
So it has become a norm. We don't necessarily get a notification on a death on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean it's not happening.
Right.
Because in a lot of the cases, the person overdoses, goes into cardiac arrest, whatever the case is, and they're transported to the hospital, and they may die at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And those deaths and those overdoses may not get reported to us. Sometimes
right.
they do, sometimes they don't. So in those cases, the only way we hear about it is a family member, you know, of the loved one who reaches out and says,
right.
"Hey, nothing, you know, my son died, my daughter died from this, and, you know, nothing's being done." Well, it's not, because we don't know about it. And so we may get some of those, but the majority of those just kind of go and carry their course. They died at the hospital. It was a drug overdose, and that's where it is. I can't say it's not happening on a daily basis, but it does happen quite frequently. And there's some nights where we're going from call to call to call, you know, very long days, long nights where we'll have right. multiple in a day. So we haven't had a day like that, mm-hmm. what you reported for Dallas.
Right.
We haven't had a day like that, but we've had some pretty long days.
You mentioned pills and some of the powders. What are other ways that fentanyl is being consumed?
So the way it's, even in the pill form, it's consumed in multiple ways. It's taken orally, which is what you'd suspect, but it's also crushed up and snorted, and then it's also smoked. So for parent, a key for some parents to look for, little cut straws, like a McDonald's straw that's cut into a little piece, or like a piece of a pen straw, you know, like a hollowed out pen,
right?
With maybe some burnt looking like smoke on the end of it, and then foil. Because what they'll do is they'll take a piece of foil, put the pill in the middle of it, or a piece of the pill in the middle of it. They'll light it on fire. It kind of melts the pill, and then they take the straw and they suck the fumes off of it. And it's one of the faster ways to get the high introduced to the system. So if you see little balls of foil, little things of foil, and it has kind of a burnt residue in it,
right,
then you're probably dealing with somebody that has a pretty decent addiction problem. People don't start off smoking pills,
right?
But they get there pretty quick. And some of these locations that we watch, so we're building cases on, we can see customers go in, come out, get in their car, and they can't even get out of the parking lot of where they bought it from before they start smoking their pills.
Oh, wow.
So it's
is there a part of Fort Worth that's more prevalent? Is it North Side, where typically I've read years and years of reading about stuff like this? I think North Side tends to be the center point of drug activity in this city. Is that still the case, or is it you're finding it everywhere, even the affluent communities now?
It's everywhere. It's all over Fort Worth, the surrounding jurisdictions, the surrounding cities. We partner and work with a lot of the other agencies in the area on these cases. So it's everywhere.
The age of folks that are generally doing this, is it young children? Is it older people? Does it matter anymore?
It really doesn't matter anymore. I think statistically speaking, on a national level, age 18 to 45, this is the leading cause of death for 18 to 45 year olds.
Man.
I've worked overdose deaths of 15-year-olds. I've worked overdose deaths of 56-year-olds. Mm-hmm. So it runs kind of the gambit of age. There's not one real target age, I guess.
Yeah. Not to get too personal, but what is it? I mean, this is a very tough question to ask somebody because I know the answer, but how do you process a 15-year-old overdose?
Yeah, it's tough. I have kids of my own, so. Mm-hmm. It's tough. It's like I told my wife, I said, I'm tired of talking to parents of dead kids.
Seriously.
So like getting this word out is like,
absolutely. I saw that in 2021, this is a stat from off the CDC, I believe, or might have been the DEA website. And this follows up with the point you just made, 77% of all teen overdose deaths involved fentanyl. That was about 70,000 kids in this country. And that's from the National Safety Council, which is a 26% increase over 2020. So we're now in year 2023. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I couldn't find data on 2022, but I can only imagine it's considerably higher than 2021. So,
right.
Do you know any of the stats?
I don't have the stats. And, part of the reason that it takes so long to get the stats in is, just for example, in Tarrant County, our medical examiner's office, it may take them 3 or 4 months to complete the toxicology reports and that go along with the autopsy report, just because of the volume.
Right.
And places are still, you wouldn't think this, but places are still backed up because of COVID. Mm-hmm. So COVID has, you know, it's had an effect on everything, the criminal justice system, the ME's office,
right,
everywhere really. So it takes a long time for that data to be recorded and then reported and then, you know, translated into the statistics that you and I can Google. So,
absolutely.
But the numbers, I would say the numbers are going to go up.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Do you work with a team? I don't know how much you can tell us about your team, but do you have a whole team of people that are focused on fentanyl, or are you specific to fentanyl with everything else falling into the
fold? Yeah. So the team I'm on, we kind of came up with the concept where we're responding to the overdose deaths, and it's not just fentanyl. We respond to pretty much any of them. We're a team. It's a team concept. You can't do this alone. And I feel bad for a smaller agency officer that may not have the assets that we do, while they may not have the volume of issues that we have, it's still a lot to take on, you know, as an individual. Mm-hmm. So having a team, we always feel like we don't have enough people, but we do what we can, and we make it work. But yeah, we have a team of guys that are really, they're passionate about this, and that's what makes this work for us.
So, I know we're all grateful for the work you're doing. That goes without saying, but do you feel like you're making a difference in this? Do you feel like there will be a curve where this will stop being an increasing problem every month, every year? Is stuff being done enough in your eyes that this will slow down and potentially stop one day?
So I couldn't answer that question, whether it's going to slow down and stop one day. Mm-hmm. I doubt it will, because greed is a powerful thing. And right now people are choosing profits over people, mm-hmm. profits over lives. And that's at every level. That's, you know, the people making it in China, the people making it in Mexico, and the people selling it here. They're choosing to kill the people next door for a little bit of money. So I think that's a problem that we inherently have as humans. So I don't think it's going to go away. Mm-hmm. The first part of that question is, do you think we're making a difference globally? No, I don't think we're making a difference. In the state of Texas, are we making a huge impact? No, but we're making an impact for that mom that lost her 15-year-old, or that kid that lost his mom, or you know, that's who we make an impact for. Yeah. So
I can tell this matters to you. That's really important. I appreciate your candor here. Are anything being done to go after the sources? Are we doing anything mm-hmm. in China? And I know that cartels are the cartels. We always are at war with those guys, but anything there?
I don't know. I can't speak to that. That would be way above me as far as what's being done to target the people in China. Mm-hmm. Our goal in every investigation we do, whether we start, you know, with the guy selling five pills on the street corner, our goal is always to work it up. Mm-hmm. So our goal is always to find the person that supplied them, and then find the person that supplied them, then find their source, and then find where it's coming from. And so we try to work every investigation back as far as we go. Our ultimate goal, you know, is to find the source in Mexico and take it federal and partner with DEA or HSI, FBI, whoever the case overlaps with, which in this is usually DEA, and work it back to the original destination source. We've had some success doing that. We've had some pretty good seizures outside of Fort Worth, mm-hmm. and even other teams in our narcotics section have had success with chasing stuff back to sources outside of Texas.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, I think it's always the goal.
And people are going to jail. I mean, you guys are making arrests.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're putting people in jail. As a matter of fact, while we're doing this, my team's out there trying to put somebody in jail for a recent overdose. So yeah, we're doing it. We're doing it daily. Sometimes we have great success. Sometimes we're banging our head on the wall, but,
understood.
But yeah.
Is there anything you could say to the, I mean, I'm not asking you to, we all know that doing drugs carries an inherent risk.
I think
that's obvious, but what would you say to somebody that, I mean, because this is happening, do you ever tell people that if you're going to do drugs, don't do this? Is that even an idea?
I mean, we counsel, like when we get to these overdoses and the people survive, right? We talk to them. If it's somebody that's receptive, you can tell pretty quick. If it's somebody that's addicted, you can tell pretty quick as well.
Right.
So we tell them all the time, hey, you know, this is going to kill you. Most of them, yeah, we know. Excuse me. But we talk to parents too. We try to educate them on what they can do and things to look for. We talk to schools. We do presentations for administrators and staff at schools on telling, you know, telltale signs, what to look for, how to respond. And then doing things like this, doing interviews, doing podcasts like this, and we try to get out there, you know, to parents, the things to look for, the social media apps, you know what your kids are doing on their phones. There's a thing that Apple does that's pretty cool called the Legacy Contact. And if you have kids, I urge you to set up the Legacy Contact. You know, if something happens to your kids, you could be named the Legacy Contact. That would give them access to that would give you access to your kid's phone if you didn't know that, if they changed the passcode and you didn't know it. Because a lot of these investigations, the evidence we need is on that phone.
Sure.
And, you know, parents come to us all the time and like, I have my kid's phone. I know his dealer was, he was talking to him on Instagram or, you know, Snapchat or whatever it was. But they give us the phone and there's no passcode. And sometimes we have success getting into them and sometimes we don't. And a lot of those investigations will halt if we can't get to that evidence. So having the access to that phone, and you know, if your kids are not young enough, demanding that you know their passcode, actually looking and seeing what they're doing on their phones.
Right.
There's several third-party apps out there where, you know, if your kids are young enough, where you can actually log into your phone and see what they're doing on their phone.
Right.
Social media apps like Instagram and Snapchat, hold off on those as long as you can. Those are not a good place for young kids. And the access to so much stuff in there in the drug world. I can't tell you how many of these people we've dealt with met their dealer on, you know, a social media app or ordered their dope through their social media app.
Right.
So that's huge. And truly there's so many studies into that stuff that, you know, unrelated to narcotics, even that how awful it is for young kids. But, on this aspect of it, hold off on that as long as you can. And if you do allow them to have it, make sure you have access to check it and check history and and everything else. So, and on another note, if you have somebody you know, even if you just think they smoke marijuana, get some Narcan, keep it in your house, know how to use it.
Is that an over-the-counter
product now? It's, yeah, you can request it at your pharmacy. There's a lot of nonprofit organizations out there that supply it. If you have somebody that you know is using, then you better have multiple doses of Narcan.
Tell us what Narcan is, people.
So Narcan is a it's an opioid blocker. So what happens if you're using an opioid, you have the receptors in your brain that absorb the opioid, and Narcan will go in there and block those receptors from receiving those signals. So it basically reverses the effects of the overdose. If you can get it administered fast enough, then it can stop the overdose. The person will come out of it. And it's really what has kind of turned the tide. I mean, these numbers for these deaths would be through the roof had we not Narcan not been available, you know. And so if you have somebody struggling with, even if you think they're just party drugs, because all of your MDMA, your ecstasy, all those now, there's a potential for fentanyl to be in those. Really, there's not a safe drug. If you're not getting it from a pharmacy, there's a potential for fentanyl to be in it.
That's really powerful to hear. So
yes,
all these people doing even minor stuff, if you don't know, you're still taking a risk that you probably don't want to take.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And earlier you asked, I like to use this as an example. You asked, you know, who's using it or what part of town is it affecting? So in 2021 spring break, there was West Point cadets, right? So, I mean, West Point cadets, these kids, that's a hard school to get into. You have to have a letter of recommendation from a Congress, you know, just all kinds of crazy stuff to get into West Point. And there was five cadets on spring break in Florida. And three of them overdosed, thought they were getting cocaine to party with, and three of them overdosed on cocaine, and two of them came and started doing CPR on them, and they overdosed from secondary contact to the person. So you had five cadets that were out, you know, and passed out in the front yard of this house on spring break. I think everybody ended up being fine. You know, EMS responded, and I think two of them were, you know, in pretty bad shape for a little while, but I think everybody came to. Wow. But this is, you know, that's five kids that you would never suspect that you would have an issue with.
Absolutely.
With fentanyl, and here they are in Florida.
I think I've heard a rumor of the fact that if you can touch it, is it touchable or is it ingestible, or can you get it in your body through touch or you said through CPR, but
right. Once again, it depends on the form of it, right? If it's a powder form versus a pill, if you handle a pill, you're not going to, you know, nothing's going to happen to you from handling a pill that has fentanyl in it. You would want to wash your hands with soap and water, not hand sanitizer. Hand sanitizer is good for a lot of things, but fentanyl is not one of them. So soap and water and wash it thoroughly if you come into contact with any of it. So it is ingesting it is what's going to do it to you. Mm-hmm. Whether you know, there's a dust from the powder that you breathe in, or you know, sometimes people crushing up the pills. Mm-hmm. You know, it's but the majority of people that are getting the effects of it are ingesting it in one way or the other.
Right.
So,
well, since you talked about the parents of the kids that you're running across that have overdosed, you mentioned signs, the little straws, the pin straws. Any other signs that parents out there might be able to see or recognize that might be an issue?
Some of the common terms that we use, the perks, 30s, blues, M30s, menu, like I'm just trying to think of some keywords that people use when they're texting mm-hmm. drug dealers or using it on their, apps, asking for a menu. If somebody's asking for a menu, they're asking for, you know, what they're selling and how much it costs. Right. If they're asking for the blues, the 30s, the perks, those are all fentanyl. Even if you get online and just Google dope or drug emojis, there's a whole list of emojis that are used for different drugs. So those are interesting to look at. And if you're going through your friends, your kids' Instagram friends, and you see somebody that, you know, with these emojis next to their name, they might be a source of supply for somebody. So those are all things to look at for sure. As far as in your house, with the fentanyl, the blue pills, they will, if they're crushing them, if they're breaking them up, they'll have like a real fine blue powder residue that you can see. If they're crushing them, they're probably snorting them. So once again, the straws or something to actually snort the pill on. Mm-hmm. A lot of people like using a clear surface, like a smooth surface, like glass or a mirror, to crush them on, right, to snort them. So make sure they get all the powder out of it. And then if they're smoking it, the foil is a huge indicator. Huge indicator.
One of the new things I just read about is rainbow fentanyl. So they're tricking up the pills to make them look like candy. They're different colored. Is that sound accurate?
So yeah, and I don't know if they're trying to. I know a lot of it might have been. I don't want to say a scare tactic, but when they put it out as, you know, trying to portray it as candy and pushing it out, I don't necessarily think that was the intent. Mm-hmm. I think that maybe they just got a good deal on this different binder and it looked cool, so they started producing it that way, because it's still marked with the M and the 30, mm-hmm. same shape, same size. And then maybe it was just to fancy it up, you know, make it look cooler. But you are seeing these pills too. I mean, it's not just the Percocets, the M30s, there's plenty of the Xanax bars that are being pushed out that are mm-hmm. fake as well. And they'll have either a fake form of alprazolam in it, or it will have fentanyl in it. Mm-hmm. It's not just the M30s that are being pushed out. Like I said earlier, the party drugs, your MDMA, all of your like raver type drugs too, those are being laced with the fentanyl as well.
Right. Some of its street names, just I got this off the DEA website, I believe, but even the street names are scary. You know, China Girl and Dance Fever, Murder 8, Tango and Cash. I don't know if you've heard any of these, but this is what, you know, we're being told
right.
some of the names for it. Tango and Cash, Jackpot, I mean, Goodfellas. It's even the street names that lead to you to believe there's something really seedy and devious and dangerous behind these drugs, and we all know that to be the fact. So
absolutely,
I appreciate you sharing the ones that you just did, the street names that you're dealing with. But this might be hard to answer, but when you're talking to these parents who lose a child from an overdose from fentanyl, I mean, is there anything the parents are telling you that you could share with us, like what they wish they had? I mean, we all wish they could have stopped it, of course, but what are the parents saying?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them carry guilt and wish they could have done more. Mm-hmm. And I think when you're dealing with somebody that has an addiction, it's a little bit different than you're dealing with somebody that, you know, they may just been at a party and got a pill or you know, one, you know, the whole slogan that DEA has is one pill can kill, and that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not even a one pill. Sometimes it's half a pill. I've known a case we worked where the girlfriend got a half and the boyfriend got a half. The girlfriend died, the boyfriend lived. And so I think a lot of them wish they would have done more. They wish they would have been more on top of, you know, had access to their kid's phone, been more involved that way. I don't.
That's fair.
Like I said, there's a lot of guilt that comes with it, and for a parent that they're going to carry, and they're probably carrying for the rest of their lives. You know, that had I not done this, had I stepped in more, you know, I knew my kid, you know, smoked weed. I knew my kid did this, but I never thought he would do that,
or she would do that.
That's pretty common. I knew they experimented, and I knew they did this, but I never thought they would have done that. A big thing is have the conversations. It's never too young to start those conversations with your kids. I have a 12-year-old, and I've talked to him about it since, you know, he was, you know, old enough to even understand.
Sure.
But have the tough conversations, have them often, and reinforce it. Ask them what they're seeing at school. If they tell you they're not seeing anything, then they're not being honest with you.
Sure.
And, you know, unless they're maybe 10, but it's there. I mean, it's in the middle schools, it's in the high schools, it's everywhere. It truly is. So,
is there anything people like us can do to be useful in this regard? I mean, we all know what we're up against, and you've outlined a pretty hellacious story here, but what can people who want to be helpful do besides keep an eye on their kids? Is there anything we can do to help you guys?
Yeah, I mean, keep an eye on your kids is huge. Talk to them. Be open and honest with them about it. Be open and honest with the dangers of it. As far as directly supporting us, I don't know at this point what it is. There's a lot of nonprofit organizations out there that help spread awareness. Spreading awareness is huge, because if the parent doesn't know what they should be doing, then they're not going to know what to do. Or they won't do what they should be doing, I should say. So spreading awareness, I know social media is a huge thing, but sharing stories on social media, finding these foundations that the nonprofit organizations, that's their mission. And don't ever have the mindset of my kid would never.
Right.
Because there's always a chance. There's a lot of parents out there that thought that their kid would never until they did.
Yes, sir.
And that's whether it's drugs, you know, alcohol, smoking, you know, whatever it is, the mindset of my kid would never. There's a lot of people that ignore stuff like this because they don't think it could affect them
right.
until it does.
Does the Fort Worth PD have any information online about this? Is there a resource for people here in Fort Worth, or is it more of a federal?
I know for a fact DEA has tons of resources. The Texas National Guard Counter Drug Program has tons of resources. It has tons of resources for educators as well, school districts. They have an awesome program where they can come to the schools, and they have stuff to hand out and presentations and videos, and that's all like top-notch produced, awesome mm-hmm. stuff. We get a lot of questions to us asking us if we can come to schools to talk to kids, and that's not really what we do because that takes us away from everything sure. else. So those programs are available. And if your school district doesn't have something like that, pushing for that to be in the schools would be huge.
Yeah.
So that's something that parents can do. And as far as what Fort Worth, I couldn't tell you because that's not my area as far as what they host on their website or sure. anything like that. But I'm sure there is some information out there. I know we've released some media releases in the past and some about fentanyl. But I can't speak to that right now off the top of my head. So.
Well, before we wrap this up, could you just for impact's sake, so people who have listened to this know, they already know it's serious. Are you able to tell us one story, one encounter you've had with this, that just to bury the hatchet before we let you go? Because I mean, we all know what we know, and you know, you can't hear about one dead kid is more than enough, right? But
right.
people hear a real story from somebody who lives it. You can't help but you don't forget that, and maybe that might help somebody down the road.
Yeah, I mentioned the one earlier about the boyfriend and girlfriend
right.
That split a pill. That one was, I think it was 22-year-old girl, beautiful young girl, and her boyfriend. She got off work, went and picked up a pill from the dealer, and they came home. They split it.
Was it for that purpose?
Or for that purpose. Was it OxyContin? It was a Percocet, yeah, an M30, a blue, you know, whatever you want to call it. So we try not to call them the Oxy, because they're not, well, Oxy is another nickname that you might hear it by, but sure. We don't, the oxycodone, we don't really call it by that too much, because it's not, there's nothing in there that's oxycodone. So even though it's counterfeit Oxy, yeah, sure. But that's what it was. It was an M30. And she had battled, she had some addiction issues off and on that she went through talking to her family. And so anyways, it took a little while for us to, we figured out who the source was pretty quickly, and that's great. But then you have to figure out who this online person is, because they don't always put themselves on there. So it took us a little time to actually narrow it down and figure out who he was. We were able to figure out who he was. And then we were able to, take that information and find somebody who could reach out to him and order more pills from him. So we started buying pills from him. We got him identified. And then our goal was to find other sources of supply for him and work it that way. So I think we bought from him for, it was several months. We bought from him off, you know, periodically before we lost contact with him, because our source, or the person that was working with us, decided they didn't want to do this anymore. So they went away. So we had to basically reestablish contact with him, and there'd been a break. So it was kind of difficult to do. But one of our guys was actually able to step in and pretend they were a high school or a college age kid and make contact again. And anyways, we were able to set a deal up and arrest the guy. And then he was prosecuted federally and sentenced.
Because of the death?
Well, he pled, which, he did not plead to the death. But he pled guilty to the distribution and to the possession of the pills. And so that case met the thresholds, and DEA jumped on board and filed it to the AUSA's office. So he was sentenced, and he'll be in jail for a while. And we have, gosh, there's so many more, but there's some aspect of the cases that are still sure, ongoing. Fair, you know, we're enough. Chasing that down the line. But yes, he was sentenced federally. That was a good phone call to make to the mom to tell her, hey, you know, we got him.
Good. So good. Congratulations.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything else I'm forgetting to ask you before we wrap up?
Yes, absolutely. We get tips all the time on drug dealers through an anonymous, through Crime Stoppers. We get tips all the time. And if there's somewhere you could put a link at the end of this or yep. of the Crime Stoppers website and phone number, we'll just ask this of anybody that leaves a tip is, we get a lot of good information, but there may be some small piece that we're missing that we need to take it from information on a piece of paper to an active investigation. Mm-hmm. And if there was some way somehow that tipster would be comfortable enough with making a, you know, a lot of them want to stay anonymous, which is fine. Even if we contact you, you're still going to be anonymous. If you leave a phone number, that tip is never shared. We don't give that phone number out to anyone. You know, it's not information that we give to anyone. So if you can put an email address or a phone number, or even if you use a text for free app that's not your real phone number, or make a Yahoo email address that's not your real, but if there's somebody that we can physically talk to on the other end of that complaint, that would be a game changer for us.
Just to corroborate,
because there may be something very, very simple that you left out of that complaint that prevents us from doing what we need to take that complaint to the next level. Because we get information all the time. We get tons of great complaints, but some of them are just missing a piece of information. And it's no fault to the person reporting it. They may think that they just don't know what we need. Yep. So if you're brave enough to make that complaint, you're going to stay anonymous no matter what. So just take that extra step to put some information on there so we can take that complaint to the next level.
Fair enough.
Yep.
Well, and Narcotics Officer Jeremy Prescott, thank you for the time. Thank you for enlightening us on this crazy problem called fentanyl. I really appreciate your time. Thank you for joining Fortitude. Thank you, Captex Bank. Until next time.
Roxo Media House.